Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am going to cover in this audio Judges chapter 12, all 15 verses. I will entitle this section Jephthah's Conflict with Ephraim, and then at the end of the chapter we have brief but honorable mention of three minor judges of Israel, Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon. Our context is this. In our last chapter, we discussed that thorny theological question of Jephthah's vow. We decided it was not that he would vow to sacrifice his daughter as a burnt offering, but rather to dedicate her to perpetual service as a virgin in the service of God at the tabernacle. And so that's our immediate context in Judges chapter 11. The first part of that chapter 11 gave the background of Jephthah's history, how he became a judge, what his family life was like, and so forth. And then he beat the Ammonites in the last half of chapter 11. But he's not finished. He's got a little conflict, not with the pagans this time, but with his fellow Israelites. So we start now in Judges 12, verses 1 and 2. Then the men of Ephraim were summoned, and they crossed to Zaphon and said to Jephthah, "Why did you cross over to fight against the sons of Ammon without calling us to go with you? We will burn your house down on you." Hostile words. Jephthah said to them, "I and my people were at great strife with the sons of Ammon. When I called you, you did not deliver me from their hand." Now the men of Ephraim were situated right across the Jordan River to the west, right near where the Jabbok River runs into the Jordan Valley. And so they were close to all the action. And so they crossed over to Zaphon, which if you look at the map in the Jordan Valley, you see the Jabbok River running into the valley. When it runs into the valley, it takes a sharp southwestern turn. It doesn't actually hit the Jordan River till it gets down near Adam, a little bit, a couple of miles to the south. But let's just say when the Jabbok River hits the Jordan Valley, you see the little town of Succoth, which means booth. That's where Jacob built booths there when he was running from Laban. In Genesis, you recall the story, and then in Peniel or Penuel, it can be either way. Jacob had his famous wrestling match with the angel of Jehovah. Then Laban came there and met him at Mizpah, which is somewhere in the area. There's a question mark on the map. And they had their famous Mizpah benediction. "May the Lord be between me and thee." I always like that because in the Presbyterian church, they were always repeating that to us when we left. Well, Zaphon is right in the area there. It's a little bit north in the Jordan Valley, north of Succoth, north of the Jabbok River, close by. So the Ephraimites cross over there and they say to Jephthah, they cross over now going from west to east, because Zaphon is on the east side of the Jordan River. "Why did you cross over, Jephthah? Why did you cross over to fight against the sons of Ammon without calling us?" Now what they mean by crossing over to fight Ammon, that means leaving the area north of the Jabbok River, going south to where the Ammonites were, south of the Jabbok River. "Why did you do that?" Ephraim says to Jephthah. "Why did you do that without calling us to go with you?" Now they were complaining just like the same Ephraimites did in Gideon's case. Gideon fought the Midianites up there at Mount Moreh in the Jezreel Valley. And what's the first thing the Ephraimites do? "Hey, you didn't call us to help fight the war." In both cases, the Ephraimites wanted the spoils of victory without the risk. Now Gideon, of course, later on called the Gideonites. After the Midianites fled from the initial battle at Mount Moreh, they fled trying to cross the fords at the Jordan River, and Gideon called on the Ephraimites to stop that crossing, and the Ephraimites did participate. But they were always bellyaching about not getting called to the battle. John Gill says they were a proud and turbulent people. Why were they complaining here? Well, the reason they complained was because they were scared that the Gileadites, that family of the tribe of Manasseh, of which Jephthah was the leading spokesman, they were afraid that the Gileadites were getting too much power. They again wanted all the spoils without taking any of the risk. And so they threatened to burn Jephthah's house down. Real wonderful people these Ephraimites are. Instead of rejoicing in Israel's deliverance, they threatened to murder Israel's deliverer. Jephthah responded in verse 2 and he says, "I and my people were at great strife with the sons of Ammon." What he's saying was it was the Gileadites and the Ammonites, that family of the tribe of Manasseh, that was fighting the Ammonites. The battle, the conflict, had nothing to do with the Ephraimites. So Jephthah would have been perfectly justified in not calling Ephraim. But we find out in verse 2, he did call the Ephraimites. Assuming he's telling the truth, and I'm sure he was, He says at the end of verse 2, when I called you, Ephraim, you did not deliver me from their hand. So Jephthah is saying, hey, I didn't need to call you, but I did call you. So now you, when you are accusing me of not calling you, you're basically telling a lie. I did call you. Now, this calling of Ephraim is not mentioned in the scripture, but the Ephraimites didn't deny it. And of course, it's true. It's undoubtedly true. So the Ephraimites here are showing themselves to be real horses' rears. So we go now to verses 3 through 6 in Judges 12. Jephthah continues, when I saw that you would not deliver me, I took my life in my hands and crossed over against the sons of Ammon. He's talking about, I took the risk, you didn't. And the Lord gave them into my hand. Why then have you come up to me this day to fight against me? Then Jephthah gathered all the men of Gilead and fought Ephraim. And the men of Gilead defeated Ephraim because they said, you are a fugitive of Ephraim, O Gileadites, in the midst of Ephraim and in the midst of Manasseh. The Gileadites captured the fords of the Jordan opposite Ephraim. And it happened when any of the fugitives of Ephraim said, let me cross over, the men of Gilead would say to him, are you an Ephraimite? If he said no, then he would say to him, say now Shibboleth. But he, that's the Ephraimite, said Sibboleth, for he could not pronounce it correctly, couldn't say the H. Then they seized him and slew him at the fords of the Jordan. Thus there fell at that time 42,000 of Ephraim. That's a lot of people, a lot of soldiers. Now, in verse 3, when Jephthah tells Ephraim, when I saw that you would not deliver me, I took my life in my hands, he's saying, hey, I risked my life for you, you sorry ingrates. I imagine he's getting pretty hot by now. You threaten to burn my house down. You call me, you lie about me, saying I didn't call you to help. And so the war began. Now, this phrase here is said to have provoked Jephthah into starting this war. The men of Gilead defeated Ephraim because the Ephraimites said, you are, said to the family of Gilead, Jephthah's family, you are fugitives of Ephraim, O Gileadites, in the midst of Ephraim and in the midst of Manasseh. Well, what does that mean? Well, here's what John Gill says about that. Insulting the Gileadites, who perhaps were chiefly, if not all, of a half-tribe of Manasseh beyond the Jordan, of which Jephthah was. And the accusation was that they were the scum of the house of Joseph. The house of Joseph, of course, is Manasseh and Ephraim. These guys are basically tribal brothers, and they're fighting each other. And so Ephraim is saying, hey, you Manassehites, you Gileadites, who are of the tribe of Manasseh, you are the scum of the house of Joseph. You have run away from your brethren. You have dwelt in a corner of the land by yourself, and you are of no account at all among Ephraim or Manasseh. You're disclaimed by them both, and you're not esteemed by either one of them. Paraphrasing Gill here. Now, some commentators have read verse 4 and gotten two battles between Ephraim and Manasseh out of verse 4. I don't really believe it, but this is how it goes. This is from Adam Clark, who points this out. He says at the first part of verse 4, Jephthah gathered all the men of Gilead and fought Ephraim, battle number 1. And then battle number 2, the men of Gilead defeated Ephraim because the Ephraimites said, you are fugitives of Ephraim, O Gileadites. Because of the taunting language, they fought another battle. Occam's razor, folks. The simplest solution is usually the best. Don't complicate matters. Keep it simple, stupid. One battle here is what we're going to go with. Now in verse 5, the text says that the Gileadites captured the fords of the Jordan opposite Ephraim. That's right around the area there. Succoth, Zaphon. North of Adam, north of where the Jabbok River runs into the Jordan River. Somewhere in that area, there were the main fords to cross the Jordan. The Gileadites got there first and captured them. How did they do it? Maybe they were just faster, swifter afoot. Maybe there was a shorter way that they knew. After all, it was the Gileadites' own country over there on the east of the Jordan River in Gilead. But anyway, they had the fords. Fords is a good thing because then that's how they defeated the Ephraimites. The Ephraimites couldn't get across the river to fight the Gileadites, to fight Jephthah. Now, what they did is they set up a password and they say Shibboleth. Of course, they ask a question first. You're an Ephraimite. If they said yes, it doesn't say what would happen if they said yes, but I'm sure if they did say yes, they would be executed on the spot. And so probably the Ephraimite would say no. And then if the Ephraimite said no, then the Gileadite would say, well, then say Shibboleth for me. That was the password. Well, because of language differences, the Ephraimites couldn't say Shibboleth. They said Sibboleth. They couldn't say the sh sound, and thus they were exposed and then executed. Now, Shibboleth means a stream of water, which is appropriate given the circumstances. Reminds me in China, in the northern part of China, the northern Chinese could say sure with no problem, the SH sound. And sure means is, that's to be verb. But in the south of China, they couldn't say sure. They would always say si. And su means either death or for. And so they were, if somebody said in the South, they said 14 instead of saying shir su, which is 10-4, shir su, they would say su su, which is 4-4, and was extremely confusing to the foreigner who is struggling with their damnable language that is so hard to understand and learn. So I remember that well, the shir and the su. Same thing with the Ephraimites and the Manassites. Now they would seize the Ephraimites and kill them. It said, thus there fell at that time 42,000 of Ephraim. That doesn't mean that they killed 42,000 at the fords of the Jordan River. That means the battle which was fought, which is not really mentioned here, where they fought the battle. I would assume they fought it back over on the west. But at any rate, 42,000 people, that's a lot of people killed in a battle. The Ephraimites paid dearly for their arrogance. We go now to Judges 12, verses 7 through 10. Jephthah judged Israel 6 years. Then Jephthah the Gileadite died and was buried in one of the cities of Gilead. So this is the end of Jephthah's story. 6 more years after his famous vow, he dies. Some people say maybe he was depressed because of the loss of his daughter, either through sacrifice on an altar, which I don't believe, or because he had to dedicate her as a perpetual virgin in the service of the Levites. Well, who knows? He died 6 years later. He was buried in one of the cities of Gilead. That city is probably Mizpah, which is near Succoth, which is near Penuel, which I have mentioned many, many, many times, and that was Jephthah's hometown. That's where he made the vow. That's where his daughter came out of the door dancing after the victory over the Ammonites. Now let's get a little preview for the mention of the last three judges, or the last three judges of this chapter. Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon. Nobody remembers these guys because there's not much said about them. So let's give a little preview here from Adam Clark. It appears that during the administration of Jephthah, 6 years Ibzan, 7 years Elon, 10 years, and Abdon, 8 years, in the whole 31 years, the Israelites had peace in all their borders. And we shall find by the following chapter that in this time of rest they corrupted themselves and were afterwards delivered into the power of the Philistines. And so when we get there, we'll see the story of Samson, which starts in the next chapter. Clark, in another place, says this, quote, it does not appear that any particular took place in the civil state of the Israelites during the time of these latter judges. Nothing is said concerning their administration, whether it was good or bad, nor is anything mentioned of the state of religion. It is likely that they enjoyed peace without, and their judges were capable of preventing discord and sedition within, which, hey, that's a big blessing, folks. Peace. Nothing worse than war. All right, of the three minor judges, we start with Ibzan. Verse 8, now Ibzan of Bethlehem judged Israel after him. He had 30 sons and 30 daughters whom he gave in marriage outside the family, and he brought in 30 daughters from outside for his sons. And he judged Israel 7 years. Well, the interesting thing about Ibzan, he's from Bethlehem. And of course, Bethlehem is where Jesus was born, so that's a nice Bible trivia question. We need to be careful. There is another Bethlehem up in Zebulun. Zebulun's the tribe that's right to the southeast of the Sea of Galilee at the bottom end of the, or maybe the top end of the Jezreel Valley, the end that's near the Jordan River. And there's Bethlehem up there. Some people think he might have been from up there. We'll never know. He had 30 sons and 30 daughters. The interesting thing about that is the number of daughters and sons matched each other perfectly. Ooh, that's some natural family planning there between him and his wife if they wanted to have equal numbers of sexes of children. And that's a ton of them. So I should have said not wife, but wives. This man was a stud. So it was unusual to have so many children, and it was also unusual to have both sexes so matched perfectly. Well, that's Ibzan. He died and was buried in Bethlehem. That's verse 10. We go now to verses 11 through 15, and we'll finish this chapter. Now, Elon the Zebulunite judged Israel after him, after Ibzan, and he, that's Elon, judged Israel 10 years. Then Elon the Zebulunite died and was buried at Ajalon in the land of Zebulun. Now, Abdon, well, let's stop there. That's Elon. He only gets 2 verses. He judged Israel. There's no mention of any attack on Israel, so we can just presume that judging means he preserved Israel in the true religion and protected them from idolatry, I'm sure. Note that there didn't have to be military enemies for there to be a judge. So a judge must be doing more than just being a military leader. But even if you don't have enemies, there's always the problem of domestic disturbances, inter-tribal conflicts like we saw in this chapter between Ephraim and Manasseh. There's always that. And you always have to have military defense, even though you don't fight a war. At least you need to keep your military strong enough to keep people from attacking you. Peace through strength, as the political saying goes. And so Elon apparently did a good job. 10 years of peace. Here's to him. He's not very famous, but at least he kept the peace. He was buried at Ajalon, which means place of the gazelles. Now, it's Ajalon of Zebulun. We don't want to confuse that with Ajalon that was in the tribe of Dan, which is further south, of course, right west of Bethel down there, where Joshua went on his southern campaign through Canaan, and he asked God to make the sun and the moon stand still. Very famous place, Ajalon. But this is a different Ajalon in the land of Zebulun, where Elon died. I sometimes wonder whether Elon Musk was named after this Elon. Who knows? So much for Elon. Now let's go to the last minor judge, Abdon. Verse 13. Now Abdon, the son of Hillel, the Pirathonite, judged Israel after him. He had 40 sons and 30 grandsons who rode on 70 donkeys. And he judged Israel 8 years. Then Abdon, the son of Hillel, the Pirathonite, died and was buried at Pirathon in the land of Ephraim in the hill country of the Amalekites. Now, where is this Pirathon that Abdon was from? If you look at the map and find Shechem, which, of course, is a very famous place, and go about 10 miles southwest of Shechem, you will see Pirathon. So it's in the tribe of Ephraim. Pirathon was, it states in the text, it was in the tribe of Ephraim. Abdon, he had a lot of sons and a lot of grandsons, 40 sons and 30 grandsons, 70 donkeys. And, of course, the donkeys is a sign of wealth. It's not a sign of humility like it is in our culture back then. They didn't have horses, so if you rode on a donkey, you were a big shot. So Abdon here is obviously very wealthy. Perhaps his sons and grandsons were used to ride circuit to administer justice like a circuit-riding judge. So I imagine the judges, you know, I suspect they did judicial duties as well as military duties. Now, Pirathon, which is 10 miles or so southwest of Shechem, is said to be in the hill country of the Amalekites. Now, that's interesting. The Amalekites show up everywhere. Their basic place of operation is in Arabia Petraea. And Arabia Petraea is mentioned all the time in the ancient sources and the early sources because that's how the ancients described Arabia. They divided up into Arabia Felix and another Arabia, which I've forgotten right off the top of my head. But Arabia Petraea shows up a lot. And why? Because that is the land between the Dead and the Red Sea. It's easy to remember. It rhymes. Dead in the Red Sea. You go to the southern tip of the Dead Sea, and you go all the way down to the tip of the Gulf of Aqaba, which is the rightmost or the easternmost gulf as the Red Sea branches. That is the area of Arabia Petraea. And you go from there, and you go west towards Egypt and go to the border of Egypt. That's Arabia Petraea, that general area. And that's where the Amalekites were. You remember they fought the Israelites at Rephidim right next to Mount Sinai. Joshua beat him as Moses held up his staff. When Moses let his staff down, Joshua would start losing. Then Moses would hold his staff up, and Joshua would start winning. And so that's where they were from, those Amalekites. And God did not like these people because they hated Israel. They tried to mess with them all the time. So let's read a little summary of the Amalekites and Easterns. They were a pastoral and hence a nomadic race, and that might explain why they show up everywhere. Their kings bore the hereditary name of Agag. They attempted to stop the Israelites when they marched through their territory, attacking them at Rephidim. That was near Mount Sinai during the first months of the Exodus. That was the battle that Joshua won, but he would start losing when Moses, who was looking down from a mountain, looking down on the battle. If he did not raise his staff, Joshua would lose. If he raised his staff, Joshua would win. That was the Amalekites. God did not like the Amalekites. The Amalekites afterward attacked the Israelites at Hormah. If I remember correctly, that's after Hormah means destruction. That's in Numbers 14. We read of them subsequently as in league with the Moabites. Well, Hormah is right there in Arabia Petraea between the Dead and the Red Sea, maybe a little north of the tip of the Dead Sea, but in that area. And then the Moabites, that's east of the Jordan River, east of the Dead Sea. There was the Amalekites there. They're in league with the Moabites and the Midianites. That's often not mentioned. It's usually you just think of Moabites and the Midianites because of the illicit sex with the Midianites. But the Amalekites were joining with the bad guys too. Saul finally desolated their territory, destroyed their power. You remember Saul was supposed to kill all their sheep, and all of a sudden Samuel said, well, Saul, if you're supposed to kill all the sheep, supposed to kill Agag and kill all the sheep, what's the sound of that bleeding I hear? So Saul was a little slack there, but he finally beat the Amalekites. David is said to recover booty from them in 1 Samuel 30. And the Babylonian inscriptions, they're called Sutei, and those of Egypt, Sitiu, and the Amarna tablets include them under the general name of Kabati, and Kabati means plunderers. That's a great name. And they show up in all the ancient Near East archaeological remains. I like that. These people were everywhere. Now we find them all the way up here in Ephraim. They were a nomadic people. all the way up at near Parathon and Shechem, the hill country of the Amalekites. Ladies and gentlemen, we have finished Judges chapter 12. And now we are ready to go to chapter 13. And we will look at the story of Samson's birth, verses 1 through 25, the entire chapter. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.